next trophy is for the most unique chili. Goes to entry number 5, and that goes to my friend Mary G. Is Mary still here? Oh, she left. It goes to Mary G. She's not here. So, okay, swap it, give it back to Miss Ava. We'll have to get that to her. We'll take it to... Aha, the best tasting chili. Entry number 8, and it goes to Miss Frances. Best tasting chili right there. All right, Frances. And those are our trophies. We thank you very much for bringing your chili and all the other food, too, because without it, of course, we wouldn't be able to have a successful chili cook-off. You got to have chili at a cook-off, right? All right, then. At this time, I'm going to ask Susie to come up, and I believe she's going to do the raffle. All righty?
Okay, our total on the raffle tickets is $188. So half of that would be $94. See, I'm shaking them up, aren't I? Okay. Read the number.
5, 6, 4, 5, 8, 4.
Okay. Okay, the number is 5, 6, 4, 5, 8, 4. Hold the bucket. Tell her, don't bring your ticket up. Bring your ticket up. We'll have to check your ticket, Donna. Al-Anon has to check your ticket.
I've been checked out before, baby.
That's
2 years in a row, isn't it?
That's it.
I got
the last time I won it, I gave it back. Because I felt bad.
How do you feel this year?
I feel bad. I just want to say thank you very much, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Okie dokie. Special thank you to our little helpers, Cooper and Ava. Thank you, guys. You did a great job. All right. At this time, we would like to start our Alcoholics Anonymous speaker meeting, and I'm going to ask David A. if he would come up and chair that meeting for us, please.
David Anderson, I am an alcoholic. Sobriety dates June 18th of 92, and there's a lot of people in my life grateful for that, me especially. I'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence, and then we'll follow that with a serenity prayer. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. One little editorial comment. I realized something as I was sitting here eating the chili today. We're the only group of people that can ask people to make chili and cornbread and bring it and enter it for free and win a little $2 plastic trophy, give the stuff away, and then we charge y'all to eat it. Now, if that's not alcoholic, I don't know what is. And I'm guilty. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I've asked Tracy to come up and read how it works, and then I've asked Leah to come read the promises.
Hi, I'm Tracy. I'm an alcoholic. And this is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let it go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a part of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 7, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And see that God could and would if He were sought. Thank you.
My name is Leah, and I am an alcoholic from the Lake Quitney Group. These are the promises. I switch the page. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Tracy. Our speaker, speaker tonight is Gordon, Donna's husband. And one of the neatest things about having a husband and wife team talk, I was told a long time ago that the Al-Anon usually remembers what happened, and the AA kind of has his own little spin on things. They said that's the reason why Lois Wilson wrote the book Lois Remembers, and Bill has a book As Bill Sees It. But I do want to say, Donna, I did get one little resentment when you said something about living with an alcoholic can make a neurotic out of anybody. For some reason, that hit home with me, and I didn't like hearing that. Anyway, Gordon is going to come up and tell us his side of what went on. And I've heard him before, and I've been in a lot of meetings with Gordon, and I really respect this man, and looking forward to hearing him again. So, Gordon, come on up and tell your story.
Few notes. My name's Gordon Pickett. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April the 16th of 1984. And for that, I'm truly grateful. I want to thank David and Olga and whoever else was on the committee for inviting us, all of you, for putting up with us. It's an honor to come here. It's an honor to be asked to participate in anything involved with Alcoholics Anonymous and the recovery. My Donna lined out pretty near the truth. What you're going to hear from me is the way I remember it. So, you've already heard the truth. There's a fellow that is a member of our group in Lake Whitney. Every time he gets up to say very much, he always starts out with a joke. I have a horrible memory. It could be brain damage. So, I have printed this off. If you will pardon me, I'm going to read you a joke. This is not AA-approved material. In the title to it is, Texas judge gives 7-year-old right to decide custody. A 7-year-old boy was at the center of a county courtroom drama yesterday when he challenged a court ruling over who should have custody of him. The boy had a history of being beaten by his parents, and a judge initially awarded custody to his aunt. In keeping with the child custody laws and regulations requiring that the family unity be maintained to the highest degree possible, the boy surprised the court when he proclaimed that his aunt beat him more than his parents, and he adamantly refused to live with her. When the judge then suggested he live with his grandparents, the boy cried. He said they also beat him. After considering the remainder of the immediate family and learning that domestic violence was apparently a way of life among them, the judge took the unprecedented step of allowing the boy to propose who should have custody of him. after two recesses to check legal references and confer with child welfare officials, the judge granted temporary custody to the Dallas Cowboys, whom the boy firmly believes are not capable of beating anyone. I am a Cowboy fan, don't take it personal. And then, the Texas State Police are cracking down on speeders heading into Dallas. For the first offense, you get two cowboy tickets. If you get stopped a second time, they make you use them. So much for the levity. I will try and refrain from any kind of a rebuttal of what Donna said, because it truly is. I appreciate the way she tells the story. And there are parts of it that are hard to listen to even today. But I know that it's true. And that's what the hard part is. I was fortunate enough to have grown up with a loving family. Two brothers. One older, one younger. And grew up in the panhandle, as Donna stated. We both grew up in the same town. And there wasn't any drinking in my family. That I was aware of. I did later on find a bottle of, I guess it was vodka or gin or something like that, hidden in the closet that I kind of kept an eye on. I don't know why I would at that age, but it never changed levels, you know. It's strange that somebody at that age would even be aware of that kind of stuff. There was no active alcoholism going on in my family. There was the story about my grandfather being a bad drunk. Now, he had passed away by the time I got that story. I was too young to really have ever known him. So that was the only real, there was also that story about my uncle who had gotten sober basically through the church. And so, you know, out there on the fringes, I guess, maybe I knew something about alcoholism, but they didn't call it that. You know, they called him a bad drunk. And my grandfather, I guess, had a little anger problem and a little problem staying out of jail when he drank. But that was as much as I knew about it. I had a happy childhood, really. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it was a different time. And looking around the room, there's people in here who understand what that time was like. It was much simpler. Didn't have much money, but then nobody around us had much money, so it didn't make any difference. And we were just a kind of a normal. We went to church every time they opened the door, and went to school when we were supposed to, and did what we were supposed to, and life was pretty good. Somewhere in there, you know, I still felt that thing that we talk about in meetings. I felt different. You know, I really didn't measure up, I thought, to everybody else, to the bigger boys or even the ones my same age. But it wasn't that I was treated differently. It was just I felt that way. And that was neither here nor there. I did tend to want to hang out around the older guys because they seemed to be having more fun. That would pay off big time later on. The only thing, at one time I decided that I really liked Coca-Cola. And so I hid the quart bottles in my closet. So I would have plenty, you know, in case my brothers got wise and drank it all up. And that was kind of a strange pattern for somebody my age. I would change that later on, and I was pretty good at hiding beer. Donna kind of did touch on that. But I'll get into that. There was I took my first drink at 14. Not for any particular reason. My mother and my cousin, we were on vacation, and they were acting real goofy. And I didn't understand why they were acting real goofy. And my brother just, "Don't you know?" I said, "No." "Oh, they put some vodka or something in some orange juice, and they were just, you know, having fun." And I said, "Well, I want to try that." And so they thought about it and said, "Well, all right, we'll let you try it." You know, that was my first drink. Didn't do anything, didn't like it, didn't care. And, of course, I worked at it harder later on. Probably a few years later was when I started hanging around with my older brother and his friends, because they were having fun and they were drinking. They were having, you know, we were getting out away from the house and they had beer, but it's coolers, but they had beer. And that was the first time my older brother didn't want me drinking much of it. Of course, that was because he wanted most of it. But I kind of did understand what they were getting at that time. I started to kind of like the feeling at that point. But I liked being included. I liked being part of, especially when they were having so much fun. I think the one fishing trip where I went with them, and we didn't do much fishing, but we did burn down one of the outhouses at the lake. We needed firewood. So strange things started happening when I started drinking, but I didn't care because we were having a pretty good time. My life progressed along. I did notice about that time, of course, I'm getting to be 15, somewhere in there. I'm starting to notice girls, especially the blonde-haired ones. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm impatient, and I don't know why. And I'm not really drinking at this point. I mean, I've been exposed, but not to a great deal. So this is something that I brought to the disease, I think. People say they needed a drink before they ever had one. I kind of understand that. Don and I met at a very early age. We dated for a couple of years, as she said, and then we decided that we were going to get married before I left for school or wherever I was headed. And I had different plans, but there was a war going on, and I was 1A, and so it was kind of a big brother thing. He came home one day and he said, "You know, the direction you're headed, you're going to be in the middle of that war pretty quick." And he said, "What you really ought to do is go to college." And I said, "You know, but I had no plans. I took no college prep courses, never thought about going to college. I was going to be an auto mechanic because I like working on cars." He said, "Well, you can do that." But anyway, that's how I wound up going to college. Was just basically to make things bad. Of course, not long after that, we were making all those kinds of plans. Don and I got married. And so it became sort of important that I do something, I guess. We went to Lubbock. Again, I had a little trouble in college because, well, I was drinking a little bit more at that time. I found it hard to take a college exam in chemistry when you never had chemistry in high school, and you drank a lot of Southern Comfort right before you went into that. Alcohol began to have a serious effect on my ability to make passing grades. My second year at Tech, they invited me to take a semester off and think about what I might want to do. Of course, I lost my student deferment, and I got ready to go to NAM because that was what was, I just knew it was fixing to happen. I was fortunate that it didn't. I was able to make probation and get back into college, and it woke my eyes up a little bit. I slowed things down, got a little bit more serious about school. And I guess, you know, there were times in our drinking careers that we had the ability to alter that. I did for a while. And I was able to kind of focus in on what I wanted to do, and I started making good grades, and I got out of there. I graduated. Kind of told you in the meantime, we had a son, and I thought that was a pretty neat deal. I didn't know how to be a dad, but it was one. And he was a cute little dude. So I got out of college, and the war was kind of winding down about that time. So again, I didn't have to serve. I did have my best friend had been killed in Vietnam at that time, and I was part of that. It was a difficult deal. We were real close. They were the best men at our wedding, and it took me a long time to let go of that one. So I understand something about relationships and holding on, and I dealt with that during my drinking, just by drinking more. And years later, I was able to kind of make peace with that. And it was a veteran that helped me with it. So, and I was, I've sponsored a couple of them, but this one particular one, we talked about that. And it's funny how I got more help out of that sponsee than I think he did out of the sponsor. But that's how this program works. My drinking really did, by the time I got out of college, it got real bad. And it was getting less fun. Drinking a lot, getting into a lot of problems at home. Work wasn't that big a deal, but I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I wasn't sure if the people that were drinking out there that I saw were having the kind of problems I was having. We did do the, after college, we went to San Antonio, spent a year down there, and then moved back up to Fort Worth. And that's where I did describe the perfect job. I was fortunate enough to go to work for Miller Brewing there in Fort Worth in 75 at the onset of light beer. And I got a good job, and they paid me a lot of money, and I worked a lot of hours, and they paid overtime, and I'd never heard of that before. So I was able to work and drink and work and drink. And Donna kind of just, you know, she took care of the home fires. And that went along pretty well. They had a real liberal policy of being, if you were drunk at work, that would be a bad deal. But they didn't really define drunk at work hard enough that it caused me a problem. I did, after a while, it started becoming apparent to them that even with that, I stood out in the crowd. Now, there were other alcoholics that worked there. And I was an alcoholic when I started there. They didn't make me one. Please don't misunderstand that. I was full-blown by the time I got there. It just enabled me to speed the process up. And after 9 years of working there, one day I came to work and I was on midnights, and they invited me in the boss's office. Actually, it was my boss's office. And we had what is now called an intervention. And I didn't know what an intervention was. Now, the family was not involved in that. It was just work. But we had three levels of management, plus somebody was on the telephone in Milwaukee. And we were talking about Gordon. It's a lousy topic when you're drunk. And they said, you know, we're not going to support an active alcoholic. We think you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, and we want you to go find out. And so they sent me to a little practice treatment thing. It was a spin dryer, dry out, whatever you wanted. It was supposed to be 3 or 4 days. It was 10 days later. And I got intimately involved with a psychiatrist and his group, and his answer was to give me a never-ending prescription for Librium and Leaf. And now that's my drug story, so that's the end of it. But I did. I mean, that was how they thought it was going to work. When I wanted to drink, I just took that trank, and I wouldn't need to drink. Unless you decide that you want to drink and take the trank, and then you can really go places. So then they sent me to my boss, you know, about 30 days later, decided I was not responding to treatment as well as he had thought. And so they sent me to a 28-day program that was based on the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm forever grateful for that. They did expose me. They kept me dry longer than I've been dry in years, and exposed me to the steps. They gave me a name of a sponsor to call on when I left the treatment center, which I didn't want to leave at the end of 28 days. I was kind of liking it there. It was safe. So I took the name of that sponsor, and he was a person that went to the Whitney Group. And I started going to meetings when I got out. I mean, I did pretty much tried to do what they were saying. And I found him. Of course, I didn't tell him that I was supposed to ask him to be my sponsor. I just kind of kept an eye on him for about 6 months to see if he was going to qualify. He did. He was good enough. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I really didn't. I wanted to taper off, get the heat off, drink less, function like a normal person. And so I thought I could do this thing. And it didn't work so well. April the 15th of 84, I had one of those moments. Now that was our anniversary. I had one of those moments where I had, you know, they all thought I was dry or sober, and I was hiding, you know, my drinking out. I had my beer in the barn and a little liquor over here, and we had a nice hay barn, and I found a lot of places where I could hide beer and liquor in there. The kids weren't all that aware of what I was doing, and I don't think Donna was at the time, but that day I just overshot it a little bit again. And but I saw the desperation and the pain in those kids' eyes. And I was sick and tired of me doing that. And although I didn't go in to get sober for them, it was because of what I did to them that made me decide that this was it. And I finally did ask that guy to sponsor me. And I started working. He insisted that we start working the steps again. And I took that first step. And it took a load off of my shoulders immediately to know that, all right, I'll accept the fact that I'm alcoholic, whatever that is. I choked on it every time I said it. And my life was insane. I mean, my life was unmanageable in any direction you could look. So I didn't have a real problem with step one. It was apparent to me that I needed whatever was in this room that was working for you. And so that was what it took. I mean, we started going through the steps. Donna had been in Al-Anon, as she said, for a very long time by the time I came in. She had, I think, 6 years of Al-Anon under her belt by the time I finally picked up that last desire chip. And I'm grateful to Al-Anon for that. To me, had they not been working so well with Donna and it was working for her so well, I wouldn't have seen the change and I wouldn't have felt the need to change myself. And I wouldn't have become, I think, so unhappy with the way I was had it not been for she was getting better. And they say, if you know, you either change or you go. So it was at that point that I wondered whether or not I could work at that brewery. And so I went to my sponsor with an honest, you know, question. I didn't know whether I needed to maybe leave that job. And he said, no. You go to work. You go to work on time. You stay the whole 8 hours. You do the work while you're there. And then you go home and go to a meeting and see me for the next step. And so that's what we did. And I, you know, my life changed. People at work got nicer. People at home got nicer. And I started actually feeling a part of as we started through the steps. I did have, you know, I'm one of those that I had grown up in that family that went to church all the time, but it never did much for me, and I had left that. I had left that a long time ago. I didn't believe in God. I just didn't think he was going to have time to mess with me, and so I figured we just parted our ways. I understood that chapter on We Agnostics. That spoke to me. So step two, I came to believe that it was working for the guy who was working with me, and the insanity he explained to me was just thinking that I could drink. And I didn't, you know, that was kind of a foreign concept, that the first drink is what got me drunk. You know, I really didn't ever see it that way. And so that, I didn't have a whole lot of problem. I believed that there was a God. I believed that whatever was in that group was going to help me. If I could do what they did, it was going to help me stay sober. And certainly the insanity was there. When I got to step three, we talked about my belief and this power that they talked about. And that I could just form that concept that it was going to be a loving, forgiving, understanding God. And I went with that. It was truly a leap of faith there, because I didn't have anything tangible to tell you, I didn't feel like I had graduated on step three, but I just went on with it. There was that very small willingness and then we got into step four. There was a lot of wreckage. There were financial. There was a lot of people I owed money to. Our family conditions were in pretty bad shape. So there was repair work to be done. But I had to deal with everything on that fourth step. I had to put it down. When I was working, you know, I looked at step five and I didn't want to put down some of those things. I tried to justify and rationalize, and my sponsor would keep coming back and he would say, you know, if it comes to mind, write it down. And so I quit fighting with him and I finally started doing that. And it had a fairly lengthy fourth step, and I think it was a good fourth step. Except, you know, I didn't put down that big thing that he didn't need to know. And went into the fifth step because he made me. He said, We're going to set a date, and you will be here. Or you will have a new sponsor. So, I showed up, and we started doing the fifth step. And again, that's why I think I was fortunate that I had a good sponsor who had a sponsor who worked steps, because he knew that I was going to hold back. And when we got through that fifth step, and he did just a perfect fifth step. He shared with me. He told me about his experience. He related to me things that I didn't know about him that were pretty similar to what I had done. And some more so. And so he made me feel at ease. And we got to the end. He said, "Now tell me what it is you're not going to tell me." Because he knew me pretty well by that time. You know, I thought I was pretty slick, cool. Read me like a book. The beauty of it was that I was okay to tell him. And we talked about the one thing that I thought would never want to come to light. And he said, "You know, here's my experience on that." And I was just dumbfounded. So we put that one to bed. We finished it. He said, "You've done a good job." And he said, "You know, we're going to talk about this area and this area and this area. But other than that, we're done with it." And so we took the fourth step. Went out behind the building. They were going to pour a pad, concrete, the next day. The form was there. Everything was ready. We dug a little hole. We burned the fourth step. We buried the fourth step. And then they poured 6 inches of concrete over the next day. I have not dug that one up. But what I didn't do that time, and I've learned later on, was that I did what was in the requirements, 6 and 7. They said, "Go home and spend an hour, review what you've done, read this, spend an hour with God." And it did that, but it was, my concentration and my thought was on step 9, and that was what I was focusing in on. So I kind of passed through 6 and 7 without a lot of respect, I guess is a good way to put it. And later I would find out that that was where the change was going to take place. And if I really wanted to be different, if I wanted to have better relationships with you and you, then I needed to change me. And that's what was going to happen in 6 and 7. And I dealt with that at a greater depth later. The 8th step came from a 4th step, basically, and I needed help on that one because some of the folks that I was going to make amends to were gone. And I needed to know how you do that. And some of the folks I was never going to find, and I needed to know how you do that. And some of the folks I didn't want to pay, and I needed to be told how to do that. One of my financial amends was to a real estate guy that had sold me my first house, and he loaned me some money, which is illegal for him to do at that point. And I got kind of PO'd at the house. Didn't go the right way, so I just decided not to pay him. And I never had a real good opinion of real estate brokers from that day on. I just, you know, it was his fault, not mine. My first sponsor was a real estate broker. So when I told him that, he said, "What you will do is call this man up and you will tell him who you are and what you're doing. Ask him how much money you owe him." And I said, "But this has been forever. He's not going to remember." Yes, he did. And he wasn't real interested in my story. He was interested in the payment schedule and when it would start. He agreed to what my sponsor had considered. You know, we looked at my budget. We looked at how much I could. And he said, "Okay." And so my sponsor did explain to me that this was the way we were going to do it. We were going to call him up. We were going to ask him or tell him, you know, what we were doing and ask him if that would be acceptable to pay him that much, that frequency. And And that's the way we did them all. I learned a valuable lesson in it, and it didn't take as long to pay off as I thought. Those were the financial amends. It was the amends at home that were most important. With Donna's already explained to you kind of how that part of our family came together with those meetings. There were some pretty tense meetings, and I had others that were helping me as far as trying to deal with that. I mean, my sponsor told me, he says, "No, these are things you need to hear. These are things you need to work with." And I also had at this time we were going to a church there in Hillsboro, and there was a Presbyterian minister that I really liked. And even though I was certainly not his best church member. And everybody in that church was well aware that I had a drinking problem. But in sobriety, we had a lot of talks, and he helped me a great deal in how to deal with relationships and kind of how to get rid of the guilt of the past, because that was the gorilla that was on my back. And it was helpful. I mean, the book tells us that we should utilize people of the medical profession and professionals and ministers. And so that did help. And we bounced around about that time. Donna talked about going back to school. We had those challenges. I mean, it was a busy time in life. The kids had gotten to the point that the older one was ready to leave. He was a smart kid, and he was going to graduate early, and he was going to leave because he didn't really like Hill County, and he certainly didn't like small towns or small schools, and he wanted to head for the big city. I never really had fully repaired that relationship, and so I spent some time years later trying to iron that one out. I'll tell you a little bit about that later. My youngest one was the one that when he got to be about 14, I started, we were at odds with each other. Now, I don't know why a teenager and a dad would be at odds with each other, but we were. And I loved him to pieces, but we were not getting along very well. And it came to me one time, and it was, I think, right after a meeting. And we had talked about love and tolerance and understanding. And I collapsed. I just gave up. You know, I wasn't going to fight with him anymore. And he and I sat down one evening in the middle of a cow pasture and just started slinging snot and we ironed out a lot of problems. We just talked them out. He and I have a good relationship today. And he is sort of the Al-Anon of the two boys. But he may be a little overprotective of some things. It was, there have been gifts that I've gotten in recovery, in relationships that I never should have received for any other reason other than God just sent them. And that was one. I really treasure the relationship I've got with both boys today. But I knew that night that was where that one started. That's where we started healing that relationship. My older son would come later. It just took time. But it was one of those deals where he was starting to have some problems in his life. And we went through about a week period one time where he was trying to get some help. And I just spent that week with him. And we ironed out a lot of our problems that week. It was through this program, though, that I had the ability to even approach that level of intimacy with another human being. And it's what, I don't know, it feels good to know that you've cleaned that up to me. In sobriety, after going through the steps, I had the first guy I ever sponsored asked me to sponsor him. I was 9 months sober. Again, I went to my sponsor and asked him if I had enough time to do that. He says, you do. He says, you've got something this guy sees and he needs. And then, you know what to do. You take him through the steps. And so we did that. We became good friends. He was about 10 years older than me. But we had similar interests in life. And it was, for about 2 years, he did real well. But he wasn't ready. And somewhere in there something happened in his life. It became unacceptable for him. And he just couldn't deal with it. And so basically he kind of pulled away from the program, went back out, and did what we do. We drink. But my sponsor also told me, he says, you don't give up on him. I mean, you don't turn your back on him. But check up with him every now and then. Ask him how Whiskey Man's doing. And so I did. And I remained a thorn in his side for a long time. He came back. He went back out. He came back. We had a good relationship, and he knew where the solution was. He knew it was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he probably told a lot of people where they could find help if they wanted to, even though he never could get it for himself. I tell you that because I sponsor from time to time. I sponsor a lot of guys. I remember him probably more than any because I thought I had failed. And my sponsor understood. He says, you carry the message. And that's all you can do. You don't get to measure the results. And I was with that guy the day before he died. He got some of the other things that happened to us as we drink too much. And organs start to fail, stuff like that. But we were good friends and we parted. Current. We were up to date. We're okay. The program lets us do that too. We get to be in your life and we get to share the good and the bad. I don't even know where I'm at on time. I guess the better part of the program has been working with others. With Don and I both being in the program, we've been able to share our home, as she said, with a lot of people. And it's particularly enjoyable to have friends that are in the program that you can just make part of your life. You know, it's not just like it's our social circle. It's like, we've just kind of been melded together. And it's a special deal. There's a few that know us probably is better than maybe our own kids know us. And they're like brothers and sisters and kids of our own. So we've been given gifts beyond measure. And it's only just my gifts came because I was willing to surrender to the fact that alcohol had me beat. And you were the people that were there when I made that surrender. You were the ones that kept the door open, the ones that kept the lights on, the ones that kept the coffee going. And I try to remember that today and try and keep the lights on and pay the bills, buy the coffee, and do those things that make AA groups function and stay open and not worry about who does the most work and who should be doing something and who shouldn't. Just none of my business. I love going. Today I'm retired. I actually made 30 years with that company, 21 of them sober. And yesterday, oddly enough, I went to the retirement party for the brewing manager. That was my last manager. And had a wonderful time visiting with those who are still working there and a couple that had come back just for that. I had a pretty good relationship with those people. Long time, a lot of people. And I enjoyed that part of my life. It was rewarding, not just financially. It was rewarding in a lot of ways. I got pretty damn good at it. I literally made millions and millions of gallons of beer, folks. My sponsor said, "You're helping them reach their bottom." Okay, I'm all right with that. There is a part of the book. I had some guilt about that, you know, being in AA, working in a brewery, stuff like that. But nobody else had that problem. I did. There's a part in the book that talks about if we're spiritually fit, we can go to the most sordid place on earth for the right reasons. And that's kind of how I looked at that when I read that. I said, I understand that part. But I have to maintain that spiritual contact, that spiritual program, or it really doesn't matter where I go. I'm in trouble if I don't. It doesn't matter whether it's in a million-gallon tank of beer or if it's in Dry County, Hill County, Texas. I will find something to drink if I'm going to cross that line. Today, I hear in meetings that it's no longer an option. I'm telling you, it's my option. You know, if I decide to cross the line, that's what I'm going to do. I drink. And when I drink, it's all going to start over again. That I realize. So today I've decided not to do that. You know, it's been a good run, but I really want to run it for a little bit more. I'm having a pretty good time at this thing. Donna talked about the boys and their lives. Again, that's one of those things where that family shouldn't have turned out that way. The odds were really not good. We when I was in the heyday of the drinking in Fort Worth, we had a really nice 4-bedroom brick, 2-story house out on the west side of Fort Worth near the Ridgely Country Club. I drank us down to a 12-foot wide by 48-foot long mobile home on a dirt farm in Hill County and couldn't make the payments. I don't know where the money went, but I can do that. So it's been a real trip. What I didn't, there wasn't a lot of physical abuse. There was some. I took a swat at the older one time and have made amends for that. I was not a physical drunk as far as hitting, but I was an abusive drunk. I was verbally abusive. I was emotionally abusive. And for those things, later on, I have found that the depth of the amend that I needed to make. I didn't understand at the time. So those things we try and continue to make progress. And that's what I have to remember. It's not perfection, it is progress. And I do work these principles to the best of my ability in all of my affairs today. That doesn't mean I do it perfectly. But I am grateful for the ability to try it again. You know. The youngest one. In the fifth grade, they were going to keep him back a year. He had what I consider to be a pretty raw deal from the teacher, but so did every other boy in that class. The teacher was just going to flunk them all. And I knew the kid wasn't stupid. And I tried to work with him during the year to see what it was that was not going right. In the end, they fired the teacher, gave us the ability to promote him into sixth grade conditionally. And we worked through that. And we worked through that because I was sober. We were in the program. We didn't have to scream and shout or point or blame or any of those other things. We talked it out. And did the things that needed to be done. That youngest one, as Donna said, graduated from college, got married, has two of the finest grandchildren on this face of the earth. And just completed his master's degree. And he's, by profession, a negotiator for a major corporation that's international. And he does big things. And he's very good at negotiating. Where he learned that part. But it's just life. It's just wonderful. I mean, it just explodes with good things today. The oldest one, we've been real fortunate that we could help. He got in. I mean, he took 12 years to get a 4-year program and a lot of money. 7 schools. Nothing dysfunctional there. But he wound up wanting to go to law school. And I was pretty sure he was going to be real good at it. So we did what we could to help him get in, to help him move, to help him get set up, and to help him financially while he was going. And he took to it like he is a good lawyer. He was the student body president, second semester going in. He graduated in the top 5%. He made law review his second semester, I think it was. And he's just done wonderful. He spoke for the student body at graduation. We got to sit down front in Houston and watch all that unfold. This program did that. This program does things that you just can't get there from here. So it's whatever your thoughts about what life may be, don't write them down in stone, because hang on to this deal. It's just amazing where it goes. I look forward to each day with real anticipation. And I enjoy each evening. And I try and tell God, thank you both times. And it's, gosh, I don't know. That's about all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon. Awesome, awesome job. Awesome. I guess that's about it. Have you got some parting comments for us, Olga? Or that's it? Let's close in the usual manner with the Lord's Prayer. Thank everybody for being here tonight.
Virginia, would you lead us out?